Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. My name is Emma Than. Thank you for tuning in. Please do rate, review, and subscribe. And on YouTube, like and subscribe there as well. Joining me today, Iman from Dishes and Dimes, Basketball News, Yahoo, finer random places, doing awesome things. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Got a Raptors dub in the books. It's been a while. It's been a minute, felt like.
It has, yeah, yeah. Two wins in the last three games. Like, I mean, this is rolling. Hello, playoffs.
I mean, that Kings one had happened, but it felt like it was kind of just like, okay, so you won that game. You're supposed to. You got Luke Walton fired. Good, I suppose, for the Kings franchise and their fan base. But this one felt very different. This one felt like this was the team that we've sort of been waiting for, looking for, and it comes with Yuta Watanabe's return. Not that he was biggest reason why they won. He was obviously a factor, but just overall, biggest takeaway from them getting this, I would say, a big dub.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, to me, the biggest takeaway is their defense in the second half. That was, That's what you want to see. That's what, like, there's so much conversation about what this team's defense is and what it can be. And a large part of this is credit to Utah coming back and what that means. Because the Raptors are, for one, just a thin team in that they don't have, because they're trying to develop and because this is a developing year, they don't have like 10 guys who can contribute like they might have in years past. So half of your roster is meant for developing guys, which means your core guys need to be healthy in order for you to come out and win. And those core guys include Yuta Watanabe. Now, they were able to do this without OG Anunoby and Ken Birch, who I would also consider obviously two guys that are in that core seven.
Sure.
So to me, it was their defense. Like, that's the takeaway from this game, was that it was a tale of two halves. That first half, where it felt like they almost had, it felt like they were almost still scarred from the 3-point barrage of the Warriors, where they were just letting it.
Well, I was scarred from that.
But like the amount of paint points that I think I saw a stat that they had 42 paint points in the first half, the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Memphis Grizzlies only scored 42 points in the second half. Like, that to me is insane. And the Raptors have been a good interior defense. Like, despite not having great size, the reason why they give up so many open threes is because they're not letting guys in the middle. And Ja Morant is probably the one player in the NBA where as soon as he gets into the middle, that's it. That's a bucket. That's a floater. He's one of the greatest guards at finishing, and he can finish over bigs. Like, he's just so fantastic to watch. And it just felt like they were getting outworked. Jaren Jackson Jr. was punking Siakam in the first half.
Yeah.
John Morant was getting whatever he wanted. And then the second half came and you saw exactly what this team is working towards. You saw exactly what their defense could be, and why you have to kind of take those lumps and bruises, because this is a developing year. And we really got to see both sides of it. We saw the bad that can happen. Mm-hmm. Although that's not, like, I feel like what the Raptors did in the first half wasn't even Raptors defense. Like, I don't even know what was going on. It just felt very lazy. And you saw their lack of size really show out, but they should be able to mitigate that with their length. In fact, I wrote an article about that this week. So it just felt very weird in the first half. In the second half, you really saw the ceiling of this team's defense.
Yeah, no question. You mentioned the paint points, only 20 allowed in that second half. So it was a huge difference maker. And after the game, the talk was the defense, obviously, and Nick said he made an adjustment. But overall, he said that the biggest thing that they were doing is that they were cutting corners with their coverage and that they weren't completing. So if they weren't rotating properly, then they weren't getting defensive rebound. And there was just this like constant flow of just the Memphis Grizzlies finding ways to get what they wanted. And in that second half, and we'll get into some of the adjustments here, is that felt like they kind of pushed up their second line of defense, and that they were including more Gary Trent Jr. kind of playing a bit more off ball defense and poking his hands in. Nick's huge on stunt and recovery, so he was very aggressive with that. And they're kind of more so living with, okay, so let's see if Desmond Bane and DeLon Brooks can make that quick move, or also can Ja Morant make that really fast pass to find those guys in that opportune moment. Because if he doesn't, then now the Raptors are finding ways to get the rotations going. And Scotty Barnes, I mean, we got to shout him out. Like, we're going to talk about him in a second, but he did a fantastic job. And one of the issues that I've had with him, and probably we've all had, and this is like, you know, he's a rookie, he's figuring things out here, but his rotations have been really off. Like, they've been confusing at times, and he was very aggressive at them, and he was also anticipating really well, and he was a huge part of what they did. And another person was Pascal, but thoughts on that? Like, it was encouraging to see that this exists with the Raptors, that because it's been so long, like, we haven't seen this in weeks.
We Audition Times recently had David Thorpe on, Coach Thorpe on, and he was talking about the string, which is like when you're playing defense, you play along a string. And when one person, like you said, Scotty Barnes, who is a rookie and it's going to happen, kind of messes up their coverage or their rotation, what that means for everybody else and how, like we saw in the first half, it just like completely blows it up, like you just mentioned there. So seeing everyone play along on a string, seeing those rotations be as crisp as they were was so fantastic. And to your point about Scotty Barnes, like, once Fred VanVleet had his fifth foul, who did we see on Ja Morant? It was Scotty. Mm-hmm. And I was so nervous in those moments because I'm just like, Ja sees a rookie on him, his eyes are just going to light up. And I understood the logic in just Scotty's length being what would disrupt a guy like Ja Morant, who's going to try to get into the middle. It's not like he's got much of an outside shot, although that is much improved this season. So it was just, to me, it was fantastic to watch that switch happen and not see Ja Morant kill Scotty. Like, I don't recall. And like, sometimes with defense, when things are working well and when everyone's playing on a string, it's really hard to say, like, it's really hard to pick up on anything. It's much easier when things are egregiously bad. And I expected, as soon as Scotty was on Ja, that we were going to see some moments where we were like, that's a rookie moment. And we didn't. And I think that that's fantastic. And then to discredit what I just said there, Pascal Siakam was absolutely phenomenal in the second half. And you can also point that out defensively. So you can see things when they're super good on defense, and you can see things when they're bad on defense. And Pascal was the opposite end of that, where he was just absolutely fantastic in the second half after having a really poor defensive first half. And, you know, he hasn't looked good defensively at all since coming in, and just seeing Jaren Jackson punk him in the way that he did and just get by him. And I know he's just got more size, but to see Pascal in the second half, his length and what this team can really do, you got to see a glimpse of that in the second half. And I think it'll just even get better. Two of your better defenders, OG Anunoby and Kem Birch, coming back in. So
no question. No question. And, something that really stuck out is like, it's the gaps that were created in that first half, and that there was just so much space, right? And they were doing those high pick and rolls, whether it was one screen or two screens, and Ja just had all kinds of room to decide what he wanted to do. Where did he want to create the offense? But then in that second half, it's like, we talk about punching the gaps, and Pascal, he was so active. I actually just found it just before we started talking. His defensive rating in the second half was 65.6.
Oh my gosh.
It was insanity. Like, he was absolutely everywhere. And this is the activity. And like Nick Nurse said it, that, I can make some adjustments, but you guys just have to start moving, like moving and get moving and start making really good reads and start understanding where the ball is going to go and anticipate well. And that is everything about the Raptors defense. Is like, the length is good. The sets are going to be there. Nick's going to do his job, but you guys have to execute.
Yeah.
Have to go out there and do it.
And that's what, like, shrinking the gaps. That's where it comes from. It comes from their just extreme length. And that's exactly what I was sort of writing about, is just like, you know, if small ball exists to space the floor, is what the Raptors are trying to do. Yes, they're still playing small because they don't have a center, but what they're trying to do is the complete opposite of what small ball provides you, which is shrinking the court. And we saw that. We saw them shrink the court entirely in the second half. And part of that is the great reads. Part of that is also just like knowing who to help off of.
Knowing
who's going to kill you at the three-point line, because it helps when you're not facing a team like the Golden State Warriors or the Portland Trailblazers, who are just going to have guys that are going to just knock it down. And it's really hard to decide who to help off of, especially when it's guys like Andrew Wiggins, who might not, well, Andrew Wiggins is going to turn into Michael Jordan anytime he plays the Raptors. But when you have
or LeBron guys
like Jordan Poole just going off for, you know, and just having insane nights, like it's going to hurt when teams are shooting well. And it just so happens that the Grizzlies just aren't that team. They're not the Portland Trailblazers or the Golden State Warriors. And that benefited the Raptors.
Yeah, and we got to keep that in mind, too, that although this was a great defensive performance, they're facing the Memphis Grizzlies. Their off-ball movement is not what the Golden State Warriors is, even what the Portland Trailblazers is, right? It's a very whole different size of it. But just if we're trying to, like, you know, take small steps towards the Raptors becoming, like, the defensive team that we're hoping, one part of it is, yeah, maybe facing some lesser opponents, teams that don't have that off-ball movement. And the other part is just simply getting healthier and having a player like Yuta Watanabe back in the lineup. He played 13 minutes. He had 2 steals. He had 2 blocks. He had 3 rebounds. He should have got a layup, but it was, but that didn't work out because the referees missed a call. But he had 3 points
as
well.
That corner three was halfway down. That
I swear to God, right?
Halfway down.
Unbelievable. And so I mean, you forget how good he is. You forget how what he does on the court. And Fred mentioned this after the game, is that he kind of forgot like how beneficial it is to have his activity on the court. He is... On no other team than the Toronto Raptors is he going to be as valuable. And that is why he is so necessary to what they want to do for the rest of the season.
Yeah, he's a Swiss Army knife. And that's what the Raptors are trying to do. They're trying to have as many guys that fill that role. And also, like I said, when you're developing a young team, you're going to have a lot of guys that make mistakes. Scotty Barnes is going to make mistakes, but he's going to get his minutes. So having other guys on the court that mitigate that or don't make mistakes and don't add on to that are going to be really necessary, which is why having someone like Utah, which just, he just does his job, plug and play. He didn't, like, if you look at the stat sheet, you're not going to say, oh, Utah had a fantastic game. But if you're watching it, you're just like, Utah was fantastic for the Raptors and a large reason why they were successful last night. And just having him back, I think, is going to be so necessary because I think they're just a core 7 guys. This team is thin so far. And I think the idea is that you're going to develop and you're going to grow to have that 10-man roster, which is what the Raptors did when they're bringing up Pascal and VanVleet before they, of course, became rotational players and now stars. So it's just like, it's nice to have Utah back. I've been excited to have Utah back. And it sucks that Kem and OG weren't there because I'm so ready for a complete Raptor game with all of them.
You know, Kem's knee's kind of scary at the moment. It seems like OG's going to be back somewhat soon, that his hip pointer wasn't as bad as originally anticipated, but Kem's knee is just lingering. And I mean, we talk about, you know, thin sides. Kem's your biggest player, and he's going to be sorely, sorely missed. So hopefully they can, I mean, with Utah back, hopefully OG comes back too. You got some runway a little bit, and with Precious playing the way that he is, you got some time, it seems like. In December, they're going to have a lot of games at home. So, I mean, home cooking always helps a little bit. But yeah, with Utah, I find that I think his mentality and the motor that he has, it does get everyone else kind of going at that pace at the same time. Like I mentioned the stat and recovery earlier on, like he is a master at it, at just like taking those two shuffles towards the player who has the ball and then recovering and then rotating back out. Like he doesn't make mistakes in that area. And the detail involved in any defense, but also Nick Nurse defense, is so pivotal to the success of what they're trying to do. And he's an irreplaceable player. I kind of wonder what kind of year, if he has an incredible year this year, right? And, you know, the thing that Nick Nurse wanted him to do during the offseason is like, you wanted him to become like a lights out 3-point shooter. And that could still come. We'll see what happens. But I wonder what kind of contract he can get himself during this offseason, because you can make the case that he, like, I mean, Robert Covington is the person that came to mind. He makes 12 mil a year, right? He's in a contract year as well, but 12 mil. Like I don't see why Utah can't get a contract like that for himself if he is indeed a lights out 3-point shooter, because he's already a pivotal rotation piece. Like any team is going to want Yuta Watanabe at this stage. But if he's able to add that offensive part, and then he's already a very smart cutter, he's a great rebounder. Man, this is a huge moment for him as well.
Yeah, I think he said, I think it was a Utah quote last year where he said if he shoots 40% from deep, then that's what he needs to do to be an NBA player. I'm like, if Utah shoots 40% from deep, Masai better come with a Brinks truck because he is going to want him. Yeah. He's absolutely phenomenal. And if he can be a consistent just 3-point threat and just be your 3-and-D guy, those guys get paid so much, and it's not like he's just a negative everywhere else as well. So he's just going to get paid. He's such a fun player, and I'm so glad that he's back.
No question. It's very
also that block. Oh my gosh.
Holy. Holy.
Oh my goodness.
He was robbed of a moment there. Yeah. Right. When the referee said, oh no, that's a defensive foul. No, sir. Right. You took a moment from Utah away. And we know that there was a moment that he was involved in last season. And actually, Gabe Vincent had a moment last night with the
same player. That's what I was going to say. And the referees took that one away, too. What is up with referees taking moments away?
I feel like with Anthony Edwards and John Morant, the only time you ever call a charge on them, well, you know, you shouldn't be allowed to. That should be written in the CBA. So you do not call offensive fouls on John Morant and Anthony Edwards because they are ridiculous. I recall seeing Kyle's face when Anthony Edwards was going up there, and Kyle would look scared, and Jimmy Butler was terrified.
It was hilarious. But
yeah, I mean, the moment's going to live on for forever, but definitely the referees
stole that away. They stole that away. Luckily, Nick Nurse had his challenge, and they couldn't steal Utah's away, but they did steal Ant's away, and that's that.
Yeah, they did. Did Pascal Siakam have a good game?
He had a good defensive game in the second half. He had a fine offensive game, I think. When you're the guy that teams are focused in on, and you still manage to score 17 points and you still manage to get to the line 8 times, which, I mean, he led the team. If Pascal's doing that, if Pascal is kind of having a whatever game and he still managed to score 17 points and get to the line 8 times and play all NBA level defense, I think that's a good game. I think that's just like a fine game. Was he like the superstar of the night? No. Was he the high scorer of the night? No. Was he the person that the Raptors needed to go to offensively in the fourth to kind of shore up the win? No, but he doesn't need to be that consistently every single night. He gave you great defense and 17 points. And I think that that's just like a fine Pascal night. I don't think it's like great. And I don't think it's bad either.
Do expectations have to change for him on the offensive end, do you think? On what his role is going to be in the offense, what he will be this season, the seasons going forward, the kind of person that he's going. Because I think the max contract, like that label, has changed all kinds of opinions about him, the expectations of what is desired from a person of that making that kind of, you know, $30 million a year. But I find that with especially with Masai too, that he's going to be giving players contracts based on their ability to contribute to winning. And it's different from other franchises because they're probably going to look at, you know, the dollar value and the point value. And that's going to be a lot more obvious when a person putting up 25, 15 and whatever. Right. But with Pascal, 17 points in this game, he shot 5 of 12, I believe. He made a lot of good decisions. He wasn't selfish with the ball. I recall a time where he had Kyle Anderson on him. He was going to post him up, but then he saw Precious Achiuwa just chilling out there. And he's like, he's made 3 threes already. Let's feed him. And he made it. Right. And that's only it's one example, but he's made a lot of decisions just like that. He's not forcing his offense, I think, in the same ways that he was potentially last year, maybe because the Raptors have a bit more talent, maybe because he's trying to be a better leader on the offensive end. You know, it's not necessarily looking for my shot and, you know, passing the ball when I'm doubled. It's about how can we make a better offense possession by possession.
Yeah, I think. I agree with that entirely. Pascal contributes to winning, and that's why he's paid what he's paid. And I still think he's the highest ceiling raiser on the team. I still think he's the best player in terms of like, just who can be the star, of your team on nights. I think he's still that guy. And I think he can still do it fairly consistent. I think if the idea is that he needs to average 23 points a game, I think he can do that. And I think he can do that by giving you great defense as well. But on nights like tonight or nights like last night, I don't think he needs to force anything. I just, that doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't, like, you had everyone in the starting lineup have double digits. You had two guys that had 20 plus points. You had three guys that had 17 points. Like, there's no need for Pascal to force it on a night like last night. And everything else that he did just contributed to him having a good game. The Raptors having the superstar stellar second half that they did. So Pascal was fine. And some nights he's going to be fine. And some nights he's going to look like a superstar.
Got to keep in mind too, that sometimes, you know, the opponent is a factor too. Jaren Jackson, DeLon Brooks, not easy players to score on. And we can give credit to those guys saying that sometimes the defense does win, right? When it comes to one-on-one matchups. And that's okay, because as long as Pascal is doing the other part of his game, which is so dynamic, and that is, you know, helping the team facilitate offense on that end of the floor, and also just being like that help defender that we are accustomed to. And that is a monster.
And getting to the line. And that's like, that's really important. If your offense, if you cannot find your shots, but you're still able to get to the line 8 times, especially with the refs calling games like they are right now, that's great.
How about Gary Trent Jr.? Wasn't that fun?
Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. He is, his shot, the release of his shot is so quick and so powerful that it like makes me flinch watching it at home sometimes. Like it just happens so quickly. My eyes have not been able to adjust to the fact that he's even gotten the ball, let alone put a shot up. And his shot, sometimes he takes them. I'm like, what are you? Oh. and you very much have that moment. He is so much fun. This run that he's on is incredible. I think he's still leading the league in deflections, but also just like offensively, I stupidly thought that he wouldn't fit with the bench. And I'm like not talking about demoting him or anything like that, but he's been able to really carry those lineups. And it'd be, I think the, like it opens so much up for Nick Nurse, just Gary Trent playing in the way that he's been able to play. His shot making is spectacular. It's so much fun. I love him. There's not enough good things that I can say about Gary Trent right now.
He's a bad shot maker.
Yes. J.R. Smith would be so proud.
Seriously. Ying and Yang.
J.R. Smith would be so proud. Yeah.
Love J.R. Smith's quote. Contested shots are more fun.
Yeah.
It's true. That's very indicative of Gary Trent Jr. The shots that he hit yesterday, it's nothing different than what we've already seen with him. But I find that the threat of Gary Trent Jr., it's slowly rising. And now teams are becoming so much more aware, hyper aware of what he does. And I think it was Desmond Bane yesterday. He said that, you know, he's one of those players that, you know, when he gets a few shots and they go in, like he gets hot and now you don't know what else is going to go in because everything has that potential. And he's so strong and, you know, his step back is there. It's, I'm getting to a point with him that I'm talking like what can't go in when he's putting it up.
That's what I'm saying. Good luck, defense. Good job that you guys are catching on. Let's see you try to stop him.
yeah, exactly. Where do you think he ranks among shooting guards in the NBA? Some of the rankings I saw going into the season, they had him around 20 to 23. And I think they were probably looking at, well, they didn't believe that last portion with the Toronto Raptors, where he showed that he has the potential to be a 20 point per game kind of player on a good day. Maybe they didn't believe that was the case, or the everyday case for him, but I think he's showing that he has that and plenty more, and that he can probably handle more of the offensive load. Your thoughts on shooting, where he is among shooting guards in the NBA?
Yeah, I think they just didn't. Well, one, I don't think anyone really recognized that he could be this much of a menace on defense. I think we all kind of thought what he did in the bubble or his reputation in Portland kind of preceded him a little bit. And his ability to shoot, I think, is like he's got the midi down and he's able to finish. Just, I mean, you kind of want that a little bit more, but he's still able to do it. And then that 3-point shot is just absolutely deadly. So, you know, just a 3-level scorer is phenomenal. I think where he ranks, it's difficult. I think Yasmin's the one who said this. I might be miscrediting her or misquoting her here, but the idea of tiers as opposed to like an individual rank kind of makes more sense in my brain. So like in terms of a tier, I don't think he's in the first tier with like the James Hardens of the league, right? So like I kind of was like going through it. You have like your James Harden, your Devin Bookers, your Donovan Mitchells. I don't think he's in that tier, right? And that includes like, and then you have like the tier of like, maybe Donovan Mitchell, Bradley Beal, Zach LaVine, CJ McCollum. I think they're all like, you know, ahead of him. Klay Thompson. And then like I think Terry Rozier is probably like Terry Rozier is better than him. He's coming up, he's looking good in the last couple of games. He's good. I don't know why I'm discrediting him. You don't think Terry Rozier is good? I think he's like looked good in the last couple of games.
No, I do.
Okay. And then I think it's Gary Trent. And then I think like that's when you enter the Gary Trent. Like, I don't know that like, oh, Anthony Edwards, I forgot. Anthony Edwards can be in that tier. And then I think you're into the Gary Trents. And like maybe I'm just not trusting Gary Trent enough to like put him in that same tier as like. Maybe he is in the same tier as the Terry Rozier's and the Anthony Edwards. I'm not sure that I'm ready to put him in there. And I'm probably just like, I'm probably going to regret saying this by tomorrow. But I think that like in terms of tiers, you have your superstars, the guys that can lead the teams, you have your James Hardens, and then you have your Bradley Beals and your Devin Bookers. And then I think you have your really solid starters that Gary Trent has worked himself into in the conversation, at least for the start of this year. Like, I don't know that I can definitively say that like he hasn't been as good as the Ants and the Terry Rozier so far, but I don't know that I think he's as good as them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know, number one overall pick and just phenomenal and so much fun and crazy and athletic and young. But Gary's phenomenal. I think he's in that tier. So I think I just ranked him like 11th or 12th. I think like if I count the names, that's probably like 11 or 12 in the league. Yeah. And that's saying something.
I think so too. I think and that was like going through it earlier. And that's kind of the range that I had him in. And it does come down to a little bit to how you define, you know, these rankings and mm-hmm. The tiering system is obviously it's a safer way to go about it. But the ways that he contributes to winning, we keep on talking about this now. And now with his defense and even just yesterday, like in that second half, he became a threat once again on the defensive end. And he got in John Morant's ear a little bit and he got him thinking more about, you know, is Gary coming? Right? Is Gary Trent Jr. about to barrel down on me and grab a steal? And even in one-on-one situations, he was also taking on John Morant. Not all the time, but it did happen a little bit. And I think about how many players can do that on both ends of the court. Obviously, you have your elite superstars, and we're talking about the Bradley Beals, DeMar DeRozan. Let's shout him out. Great offensive players.
In my brain, I just made him the small forward and Zach LaVine the shooting guard. But yeah.
Whatever the case is, players that just are irreplaceable with their offensive game. But then you got the second tier of players that are great offensive players, maybe not so great on the defensive end. But they are like obviously just up and coming. And, you know, Gary Trent Jr., now 22 years old, the ceiling for him is really hard to define on how good he's going to be. It's kind of up to him. He talks about, you know, I go home during the off seasons. I'm going to keep on working on my game. I want to become a better driver. I want to be that three level scorer that you were talking about. And right now it's probably two, but he can definitely get to the bucket. But his finishing round there is still a little bit suspect. So
he just doesn't do it enough, but I think he has, we need to see more of it.
He's got it. Maybe you think
we just need to we just don't see it enough. Like there's no, how many times, when you think of Norman Powell, I think of someone who is an insane cutter, an amazing finisher, and a great three-point shooter, and I don't see much of that mid-range. And when I think of Gary, I kind of see, once again, that lights-out shooting, and I see that mid-range, but I don't think of, I can't imagine how many possessions I see where Gary's like, oh, fantastic cut by Gary, or like, wow, look at Gary just, spin the defense down the middle. Like, think of it as much. So, yeah, I think that just needs more, but I think he has the ability to. He's athletic enough.
I wonder if his role in the offense should increase a little bit because when OG comes back, he certainly needs his time to cook and he needs his food too. But
so where do you rank him? Where do you rank him? I think I cut you off there. Third tier or in the second tier? I would say
I guess it depends on what your first and second tier is. I kind of put a lot of players all together, like James Harden, Bradley Beal, Klay Thompson. I kind of had them all in one tier, players that are just unbelievable offensive talents. But then after that, the second tier is a lot of different players who contribute to success in different ways. And I put Gary Trent on the high end of that because of his age, because of he has a few moves that are damn near impossible to stop. And if he misses them, it's because he missed it. It's not because you stopped him from missing it.
That's fair. That's very fair. I'm just scarred by Norm. There were some stretches where I would have put him in that category. And there were some stretches I would have put him in the 30th tier. So, you know, it happens.
Hey, man, I'm guilty as anyone. Like I was way too high on Norm back in the day because I just love seeing him, those power dribbles that he did towards the bucket. Oh, I'm like, this guy is incredible. But then afterwards, what happened when he had to pass out or he had to make a read didn't always go that well. But Gary Trent Jr., I'm finding that Nick is trusting him with the ball more, like you had mentioned. And if he's able to do that, and he's able to understand his gravity as a threat when it comes to pick and rolls. And it seems like Nick is more willing to put him in those situations. We're talking about the bench units. That's where you want Gary Trent to be. Like when he comes off a screen, you want that big to be like, I have to get up there because if I don't, Gary Trent's going to make the shot. And then from there, is he able to make that pass to get the defense in rotations or to find the big? And then now all of a sudden you are really cooking. And he's been able to do that a little bit.
And that's it. That's it for me. For me to put him into that second tier, even with those other guys.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I distinctly put him in that third one, I think, and at the high end of that is because that playmaking isn't there as the second guard on the court. Mm-hmm. And those reads aren't there. When you know Gary's getting the ball, he's putting it up right away. And I think there's a benefit to that, especially when he's shooting his lights out as he's doing right now. But I think he just sort of needs to develop a little bit more of that in his game in order for me to put him into that same tier with those other guys.
Let me throw some names.
Like a Terry Rozier.
Let me throw some names at you and you can say he's above or below.
Oh,
this is a joke. This is a stupid one, but Evan Fournier.
He's above. Everybody's above a Knickerbocker.
Tim Hardaway Jr.
Oh, man. I just said everybody's above a Knickerbocker.
I'm testing your trust right now of Gary Trent Jr.
You know what? We're riding a high. It's after a win. Nothing I say can be bad. Above. Yeah. You can say James Harden. Bring it in. I'm gonna bring him above.
Our boy Bogdanovich in Atlanta when he's healthy. Hopefully he is healthy.
I mean, when he's healthy. Okay. I said I was going to rank him above everybody. When he's like, I mean, it's once again, those guys that can do multiple things. Like Gary is a great scorer. He can score. But even when I mentioned Evan Fournier and Terry Rozier, like, I ranked him above. But like, they can provide multiple things. You can have them as the main guard on the court. And you can run offense through them. You can't really do that through Gary Trent unless it's just ISO for Gary. And so just their versatility. I think he's better at just like, if I need a bucket right away, outside of that first game between the Celtics and the Knicks, where, oh my gosh, it was an insane shot making by Evan Fournier. Outside of that, sure. If I need a bucket right away, I probably am going to go to Gary Trent, but their ability to do other things, but his ability on defense, and the Knicks are just horrid on defense. I'm going to rank Bogey on top of Gary.
Last name, and then we'll move on. Caris LeVert.
Caris LeVert, I think we were having this conversation last year, it'd be without a doubt. This year, Gary's been better than him.
Yeah. No, it's true. I got you. I'm going to just like putting people on the spot, I guess.
Better than him this year. I'm going to say that. But you know what? Caris LeVert is really great. And I think I'm going to get a lot of hate for saying that. But what have the Pacers done?
It's true. We're going to talk to the Pacers in a minute, actually, because that's who the Raptors are facing on Friday. But let's get back to Scotty for a second here. And I wanted to ask you what you felt was the difference between his game against the Grizzlies and maybe the 3-4 games prior to that.
Honestly, I thought he hit a rookie wall, and I know that was something that people were talking about. He just looked very fatigued. And he looked really tired. I think we were talking about the defensive mistakes that he was making. He looked so much more energized in that Grizzlies game, where in the second quarter, when the Raptors needed some sort of offense, and credit to Fred VanVleet for those steals that he was able to get, it was Scotty running the court. It was Scotty leaking out. It was Scotty that was high energy. It was Scotty that was making, for one, his shots. he's taking 3-pointers, which is like always fun and weird. And I love
legs
it.
That's good. Just getting the legs in there.
but his ability to just sort of run the court and have that high energy, I think, really changed the way that he looked and the way that the team played too. He really carried them in that second quarter when they needed some sort of offense.
I wonder if it was done by design that if Fountain got to a point where it didn't matter if it was Fred or Scotty bringing the ball up, it was just like whoever's closer to the ball, the other person just goes. And in a lot of cases, it was Scotty who's bringing the ball up, and I think that kind of got his motor going a little bit. He actually led the team in distance ran yesterday. Always find that to be an interesting stat. He ran 3.3
miles.
That's
Fred's stat. I feel like that's usually Fred's stat. I feel like he's led the team and probably the league.
Yeah.
Well, that like a number he
has? The league too. But yesterday it was Scotty. And I think that had a lot to do with one, obviously you know, guarding a bit of John Morant, but also he was extremely active and his rotations were spot on. It's like that attention to detail. And Fred talked about this after the game. He's like, you know, some of our younger players, they don't realize how hard you have to work possession by possession, second by second on defense. And we're trying to instill this in them so they understand how important it is to how we're going to win games. And I think they want to, they just don't realize how much you have to focus. Like if you're a person who has focus issues, or you just don't know how much you have to focus in a game. Like there's the physical side of basketball, but the mental side can be exhausting, and it can be exhausting playing defense in a Nick Nurse system. And OG, Pascal, Fred, obviously they know how to do this. They've been doing this. And now it's about getting players accustomed to thinking in the same way that they are. I mean, some of the mistakes he was making over the past little while, it really was just like mental errors, not realizing in transition that, yeah, your boy that you're supposed to be guarding, he's cutting to the bucket and Steph Curry just found him for a layup. Or in these rotations, like you have to understand that, okay, so when it comes to these pick and rolls with whoever, Donovan Mitchell, for instance, who's guarding who? Where am I going? What's my next big decision that I have to make? And he's been slow on it. He's kind of reacting instead of thinking ahead. And in that game against the Grizzlies yesterday, I think he was doing more of that. He was anticipating and he was locked in. He wasn't smiling much in the game. That's one thing I realized too. There were no smiles. He was just like laser focused on getting dubs outside of the one where Fred found him for.
I was going to say, he had that smile to Fred. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a great photo that I saw in Getty there. But outside of that, like he wasn't, he was locked in. And that was a great thing to see because he's so pivotal to what they're trying to do. And understandably, like a lot's being thrown at him. Like not all rookies are playing 30 plus minutes, having to guard point guards and centers and power forwards and small forwards and other guards, but he is. And I'm sure this is
aggressive defense as well.
Yeah. And, but he's taking it in stride and he just wants to keep on continuing to improve. And, that's been terrific to see him kind of have a bounce back game like that against Memphis, which was not an easy opponent.
No. And I also like enough can't be said about just like, he was a college player in a COVID year. So it's not like just the travel, the games, the practices, all of that was cut down as well, right? So the amount of minutes that he's logged so far in comparison to what he did last year is just insane. So being able to keep up with NBA pace and NBA size and all of that stuff, yes, but also like last year was such a weird year for some of these rookies. I'm assuming that most of them are probably going to hit the rookie wall way before we anticipate other rookies would, just because of how weird of a season last year was and how, you know, compact this season is going to be.
Yeah. He's got a sneaky back to the basket game too.
He's big. He's strong.
Yeah. But he finishes. He's
a strong dude. Yeah. And like Coach Thorpe on Dishes was talking about how he's showing some of his guys already Scotty Tate to say, like, this is the Shaq mindset, which is just putting your back to the basket and going in, or just trying to finish around the rim, staying. Like, he's just like his lack of fear underneath the basket and trying to either back guys down or just like finish around there is something that he's showing his guys right now. And I'm like, this is a rookie who just came in and already his tape is being used in training other guys that are professionals. So. Hey,
it's wild, man. I've talked about that very thing like a couple of times now with Scotty, and it's just so strange to see it. I think it's a bit unheralded of one of his biggest talents is just how confident he is underneath the bucket. Like, yeah, okay, he's huge. I get it. But that doesn't mean that. Yeah, but that doesn't mean that there aren't like arms hacking at him, and you know, bigger players than him trying to stop him from getting to the bucket or finishing. But he's just so focused. He's calm. It's strange, actually.
Tape already being used to train guys already.
Holy smokes. Okay, well, let's move on to another player. Let's talk Precious Achiuwa, our three-point specialist.
Yeah, future Hall of Famer, Precious Achiuwa. I was saying that he came in following the footsteps of Jason Capono, three-point specialist from Miami Heat. So can't wait to get him in three-point contest representing the Raptors. Cannot wait.
He looked very confident yesterday taking those shots. And they're all kind of within the offense. Yeah. I think a few times previously and maybe during the preseason, you know, him dribbling down the court, taking a three, maybe not things that you're looking for, but within what he did yesterday is that everything was within the flow. And I think that's kind of where his comfort zone needs to be. I'm sure he's been kind of unsure of where he needs to find his offense, but overall, I mean, like, you want him, you know, flying out to shooters, you want him rolling to the bucket, you want him getting out in transition. And, you know, the transition part has to be through the defense too, which has been a little bit up and down. But that's kind of where his offense is going to come from. And then plenty of possessions for him to get all the points he wants if he's doing all these fundamentals, because his energy and his motor, his frame, like, he's got that body type to be really successful at that center position.
Yeah,
in this NBA.
He was great. He was great on defense. It was just another good game for him. And then offensively, like you said, his shots were coming in rhythm. They were coming in, like, they were coming to him. He was not forcing the issue. And Precious is such an interesting player because I do think he has such a high ceiling. And there are moments where he has these flashes of brilliance. And he has such a high ceiling that he sometimes just does too much. And in doing too much, he hurts everybody. Like, it hurts everything. He forces the issue. Like you said, him bringing the ball down the court and, like, trying to take a three off the dribble, trying to pull up. And it's just like, that's not in your game. And you're hijacking the offense a little bit and you're doing too much. And, like, him just go, like, those shots finding him, Fred finding him, Pascal finding him, Scotty finding him, guys finding him, and him just moving. Like, that pass that Scotty had, oof, on the move to Precious right underneath the basket, that was beautiful. Yeah. And that's just things happening in when guys are moving and when the offense is flowing. And those threes that he hit, none of them were forced. All of them were really great looks. He was open, and teams are going to leave him open. And part of why Chris Boucher got so many minutes last year is, yes, he was just a menace, just with a crap ton of blocks every single night, but he also hit his open threes. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be so integral to Precious being a solid contributor, is like hitting those open threes, making teams pay for leaving you open. And when you get the ball, don't try to do too much. You have it right there. You're open. Take that three. And he just let that sort of come to him. He didn't force anything. And 17 points in a quarter is brilliant. And then you also get 0 points in every other quarter, which is going to be the Precious experience. Cause, like, hey, I don't want you doing too much when those looks are not coming to you, but when they come, please take them.
If he becomes like a steady 3-point shooter, a person that teams have to focus on, like, it's going to open up so much for a Pascal, for an OG, for a Scotty, because everything. Yeah, the paint is really clustered when you have Scotty and Precious on the court. And I think they want to use, as we saw yesterday, that they want to use Precious in that way, and that they want to, you know, instill him with trust, saying that we're going to trust you to hang out there at the 3-point line when you're not going to be a huge part or a focal point of the offense, and just do your job and make those open shots. And then his, like, I love when he gets going, because when he's running, like, he's beating guards down the court. And then if you give him the ball, like, he's going to finish through contact. And that ability is so rare in the NBA to have someone who can do everything that he's able to do on both ends of the court, because of his high motor. It's his high motor and his physicality. And the Raptors really missed him on the defensive end, on the offensive end when he was out. You don't really realize what you have until it's gone. And he kind of upstarts their energy and upstarts their physicality. And when he's not there, there aren't too many physical players, at least not yet. I mean, Fred is, but Scotty, Pascal, they're not exactly physical, I would say, defensively, but Precious, he will get into you and he will make you feel him. Utah's actually physical. He's physical.
OG as well.
OG is too, yeah. Jeez, I've already forgotten about our prince. My goodness. How about your boy, Freddie VanVleet? So,
my boy.
I'm not sure what else do we really say about Fred VanVleet, but I did want to say, I'm only saying this because I did a hit the other day, and in the intro music, they were playing Jay-Z, 99 Problems, and I hit them with this line: the Raptors have 99 problems, but Fred VanVleet isn't one. I don't really do a lot of bars. You guys are a lot better at those than I am, but I just wanted to include Fred VanVleet in the podcast so I could tell you that, because I recall you saying on group chat a little while ago that Raptors had to wrap him in bubble wrap because he's so valuable. And yesterday, once again, he showed why he is truly their MVP. And my God, like, I don't know where he's going to end up in MVP rankings. Like, the Raptors have to get to a whole different level than the Eastern Conference, but he has the game and the influence on the Raptors to be a MVP type. He's obviously going to be their MVP. That's obvious, but that's how much he's doing on both ends of the court. And he kind of fills in the gaps wherever they need help. His presence, his composure on offense. he's taken like a little leap here. It's been really fun to see.
Yeah. A guy was calling Pascal Siakam their best player, and I called him the ceiling raiser. And I was couching my words and like choosing them very carefully, because the MVP, the most valuable player in their floor raiser, is going to be Fred VanVleet. This team runs as Fred VanVleet runs. Wrap him in bubble wrap twice over, because any minutes without Fred VanVleet, I mean, not any minutes, like any games, like if he misses significant time, that's kind of it for this team. This team runs as Fred VanVleet runs. He is so steady. He's such a steady force on there. And his ability to just go on mini runs on his own, you know, even if it's not just through scoring, even if it's just finding guys, his ability to just hit a timely three, it's very, I was going to write something this season, and I kind of decided not to because of Fred VanVleet, where I was going to, just in missing Lowry, I was going to see if I can like put out something post game of like who was kind of the Lowry-esque presence in that game. And it's a useless article, because the answer is going to be Fred VanVleet almost every single time. And just the way that he's able to steady the team, calm the team, make the right, like he's just right. Like, I don't know how else to kind of word it besides just saying like he is just, apologies, without saying that he's just right.
Freddie right there praising you.
Okay.
Bonus line defense there, I must say.
He's just right. I don't know how else, like, I don't know what else to sort of say. He's such a steadying force. And I was thinking about this, just his career, his trajectory is something that is, there needs to kind of be a movie about. And when we talk about this sort of Raptors team bucking trends with their length and their size, it's just you in describing Precious Achiuwa and what he is, like you can use so many of those descriptors to talk about Scottie Barnes, so many of those descriptors to talk about Pascal Siakam. It's just the team that the Raptors are building, and they're bucking a lot of trends by doing this and taking a flyer on a guy like Fred VanVleet, who is undersized, an undersized guard at that, who kind of had tunnel vision and wasn't a great playmaker, but you knew that you needed to play him in that one spot because of his size and just his ability to grow and prove Masai Ujiri and you know, Bobby Webster and everybody correct in that. But also just like becoming the leader of this team is just amazing, and like all credit to him. And watching how he kind of like just remembering him and the bench lineups and the struggles that he had, I think, in that Kawhi Leonard season, but then the growth that he took, like, it's just like, I don't know, like there's so many words that I can't think because my phone rang and now my brain is all scrambled, but I had a coherent thought in here somewhere, I promise. But all of that to say, Fred VanVleet has been the MVP of this team. They need to wrap him in bubble wrap. He is so important. He comes so clutch. Like, I don't know where he ranks in terms of clutch scoring or assists or anything like that, but it seems like whenever the Raptors kind of need timely buckets or baskets, he's there. And I know there's been this whole thing about like fake comebacks. Part of why the Raptors are such a I think a difficult team to play against is you need to play 48 minutes in order to beat the Raptors. And that's something that the Grizzlies learned last night, right? Because they maybe thought that they had this in the first half, but you need to play 48 minutes in order to beat the Raptors. And a big reason for that is Fred VanVleet does not give up. Fred VanVleet is team bet on yourself, and he's team like never give up. He is relentless. And if you have a leader like that on the court who's relentless, then that kind of just like pushes everybody forward as well. And so teams kind of have to, and it sucks because they don't have that closer. So as far as like Fred VanVleet can push them to create that fake comeback, they don't have that Kawhi Leonard to take them home. But he's going to continuously be that guy. He is so clutch. He comes through every single time in the fourth quarter with his scoring. And it's brilliant. He's so good. Can't say enough good things.
I looked this up the other day, so I wanted to verify it. He is 14th right now in fourth quarter scoring. Guess who leads the league in fourth quarter scoring? Take a while.
Probably DeMar DeRozan.
It is DeMar DeRozan. Guess who's second?
Zach LaVine.
It is Zach LaVine.
Exactly. Really? I was just like the Bulls. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
128 points so far. And I would imagine Fred's going to probably stick in somewhere in this area. Obviously, there's some great players behind him. CJ McCollum. I think James Harden's behind him. So that's going to change a little bit, I'm sure. But overall, like as you're talking about, his ability to create in all situations now, and like we're seeing teams now, like they're putting Desmond Bain on him. They're putting other bigger, more athletic players, and he's still doing it. He's still doing it. So now they're really trying to figure out like, okay, so our bigs, we don't want to do drop coverage because Fred's going to burn us. Our point guards can't really guard him because
Eastern Conference. Exactly.
Yo, Nick Vucevic this season, they learned. Montrezl Harrell, he learned.
True. It's
all
true.
These people, like you're learning. If anything, he's just more lethal than he was before. And the thing that I wanted to ask you about, just as we're talking about Fred VanVleet, is what areas specifically have you seen him really make a jump this season? Because I think about his screen manipulation, his ability to kind of find passing angles in small windows, things like this are helping him give new dimensions to his offense, because he already was a great one-on-one player. And his shooting was obviously, I mean, he's got deeper range now, it seems like, but other than, you know, maybe the things that I've kind of mentioned, or if you want to elaborate on those, like what are some areas that you're finding that he's really taking a big leap forward?
I think you hit it exactly. I think those are like, and that's what you needed from your main guard. Now that he's taking over point guard duties, that's kind of what you needed. And his growth, like, I think, I'm not saying that Fred VanVleet is a finished product. I'm not saying that he's like perfect in any way. But I do think he's putting up this all-star, in my opinion, an all-star caliber season thus far. And he has been this team's MVP. The playmaking, and I like that you said the manipulating of screens as well. Like, I just, his ability to find guys, and just, I was worried about Raptors sort of pick and roll offense, especially if they're not going to play. And that's just like, it's the easiest like play that you can run. It's something that teams are going to do, a crap ton. And it's something that DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry were brilliant at as well. And so just, where he needs to improve, I guess, to answer that, it would still be developing some sort of floater, because he's still undersized. He's never going to be an elite finisher because he's like, they say 5'11", that feels generous to me as well. I'm going to put him a little bit under that. But so that's still always going to be it. That's still going to be where he needs to improve, is just scoring underneath the basket in some way. He is like in transition, an absolute monster. And he has these incredible finishes where he contorts his body and it just looks insane. But just being able to reliably pull out from 10 feet would be nice as well.
He's doing handstands now. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, he does handstands during pregame.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Go to the Raptors IG. Yeah, he's doing that. And then he hits the phone away because he doesn't want people knowing it. But I think he's doing yoga. He must be doing something like that, because like you're talking, he's very nimble. Very nimble, man. He contorts it in so many different ways, and he's still finding ways to continue to go downhill. And then when he's at the rim, he's like, all right, well, I'll just figure it out from there. So,
and that decision-making has been one of the main things that's improved as well. Just his decision-making on the court, night and day from early Fred VanVleet.
I think he was always kind of composed, but I think he's reading situations better, and he's understanding where the passing angles are going to be. There was a play last night, I think it was late in the fourth quarter, where he's getting doubled around the end line, and he found Pascal, who was standing underneath the bucket, right? It was like a, he passed it between two players and he just found him. He's doing so many passes like that, and he makes you feel so calm. I feel so calm when he gets on the court after, I mean, we've had some issues with the bench so far. And so when he enters a game, I'm happy.
Yeah, he was steady, but I feel like he was steady in like in a tunnel vision kind of way, where it was mainly for himself as opposed to like finding other people. Also, I want to say his ability to split the defense, superb.
Yeah, peace. That pretty much does it on all this Raptors stuff. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about? No, that'll do it. They play the Pacers on Friday. And last time you and I did a one-on-one.
Sorry, Paris Levert, you're better than Gary. Don't go off. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I feel like that was a bad jinx.
Miles Turner is going off right now too. He's doing a lot of shot blocking. They could really, Raptors could really use a rim protector like him. Anyways, back in the day in 2009, I believe. This is a trivia question for you. So that's what I was going to get. I didn't actually mention that last time you and I talked. I offered you a trivia question and you got some of them right. And it really bothered you. They didn't get more. So I'm going to give you another one. 2009, I believe it was Jermaine O'Neal was traded to the Toronto Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
What players were involved in that trade that went to Indy?
The 17th pick that became Roy Hibbert.
That's the toughest one, actually. So good.
TJ Ford.
Yes.
TJ Ford.
Think of big European.
Big European. Rosho Nesterovich? I just think of him as a Pacer and a Raptor.
That is.
It is. Yeah. Whoa. Yes. I just think of him as a Pacer and Raptor. Because he had two Raptors then, so I couldn't remember if 2009 was one of them. 2008, I guess.
Kudos. Well done. Wasn't sure if you're gonna get that one. There you go. So that is a podcast, everyone. Do follow Iman, her work with Basketball News, with Dishes and Dimes podcast every Sunday with them. And closing thoughts, Amon? Anything?
Yeah, the Raptors could be 3-3 after this, what seemed like an awful 6-game road trip, and just finishing 500 on that road trip would be phenomenal. So hopefully they get that win.
After all the concern on Raptors Twitter, look at this. They could be 3-3 on this road trip and 500.
And 10-10 on the season. Like, come on, guys. What are we doing here?
December's coming. They got a lot of home games. This is the time they're going to make their move, and they're going to be healthy. Okay, everyone. Talk soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.